or end that ties into what we were speaking about politicized violence. The leader of the Islamist religious political party in Bangladesh, which is almost exclusively Islamic. And so here's a guy that's the leader of the Islamic religious party, which is a political party, talk about the integration of mosque and state, in Bangladesh. He was convicted of arms smuggling. Now imagine, he is the leading religious figure in Bangladesh, and he is convicted of arms smuggling. Yeah, because nothing goes better with religion than guns. And the government's response to him, arms smuggling, is to kill him. We are a lost planet. Glenn, I do want to follow up a little bit more on what we were talking about in terms of this long history of people making the poor choices because they're uninformed. And but what I really want to do is close the case on Grimm here, because right, tomorrow we're going to do a different subject in the news.
Right.
Let me share a little bit more about what we know about Grimm. A 2011 article in the New Yorker described an evening in 1999 when Mr. Grimm was an agent of the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And by the way, I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or on Monday, I'm going to read one of the most compelling stories I've ever had the opportunity to present about the FBI on this program. At the time, Mr. Grimm was at a Queens nightclub when a woman got into a tussle with her estranged husband. At one point, Mr. Grimm said to a bouncer that he would make the husband, quote, disappear where no one would find him. The evening also involved a fistfight, Mr. Grimm flashing his gun and making racist comments. In 2012, City and State, a political website, reported that while Mr. Grimm was at breakfast with Labor Party leaders, with Labor leaders, I should say, Representative Steve Israel, the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, made a joke aimed at Mr. Grimm. The account said that Mr. Israel looked over at Grimm and said, "Hey, Grimm, you're not laughing." Mr. Grimm picked up a knife. The report went on and said, "No, I'm not laughing." Various individuals on Wednesday recounted personal run-ins. Ned Berkey, a reporter from Bensonhurst Bean, there's a name for you, blog, wrote a 2012 incident about the civics group's meeting with Mr. Grimm that began with shouting, spittle raining down on me, and Mr. Grimm jutting his finger into my chest. Danny Panzella, a Tea Party activist, said in an interview that in 2011, Mr. Grimm got so mad at him that he suggested that they engage in a boxing match and work it out that way. Mr. Grimm vowed to knock out his teeth. When he first entered Congress, Mr. Grimm was seen as a potential Republican star. Why? Because he was a Marine. Because he was part of the FBI background. That FBI agent and being a Marine, the Republican Party saw those as potent selling points. Hey, boy, were they ever wrong. During the 2010 primary, Mr. Allegretti, his opponent, accused him of wearing combat ribbons that he did not earn. Guess what Grimm's response was? Quote, "You sleep under a blanket of freedom that I helped provide. You should just say thank you," Mr. Grimm said, "for what I've done in my life."
You see, I don't think he quite understood the point of Jack Nicholson's role in A Few Good Men.
Yeah, he obviously didn't. You know, that is a quote from A Few Good Men, where Jack Nicholson broke the law, where he caused a young man to die, where he was willing to have innocent men go to jail for the rest of their lives so that he would not be held responsible for inciting the murder of another person, and that hiding behind this blanket of presumed patriotism and zeal for the military is Yeah, Nicholson was convicted in that movie. And here he cites it under that same myth. And that's this horrible myth that exists in America, that our military provides us freedom. It isn't true.
They are our employees, at least theoretically.
Well, not only are they employees, they don't provide our freedom. They don't protect our freedom. They don't provide our freedom. There is nothing the U.S. Marine Corps has done in the last 50 years that has been in any way, shape, or form could be construed as providing liberty for Americans. And when we need to get past that myth to have a proper understanding of the role of our military and then come to the position that Jefferson did, that we ought not have an established military, that they are not only are they not providers of freedoms, according to Thomas Jefferson, an established military is the single biggest foe to a nation's freedom.
Right. By the way, just on my way out here, I'd like to make two comments.
Yes.
Number one, I appreciate the fact that you don't hold out false hope to the audience. I get rather frustrated sometimes listening to talk radio show hosts who say, well, if we only did that, or we have solutions, or if we did this, or we did that. The problem is sin and corruption and ever-increasing wickedness, and we know from the prophets where this is going. We know from the scriptures where this is going. So all these notions of these, like suddenly, well, if there were only simply a huge outbreak of virtue and everybody decided to do right, this is how we could fix it. It's not going to be fixed. It's going to be judged. So I appreciate the fact that you're candid and forthright about that.
Before you make your next point, there is this idea of properly exposing and condemning religious and political and military and media institutions and economic institutions to show that there is no way of resolving these problems. They are all going to get worse, and that therefore we should walk away from them. We should recognize that we should not be dependent upon them. We shouldn't support them. That while that is all valid, and while there is no way to fix them, there still is hope. It's just that the hope is not national. The hope is not religious. The hope is not institutionalized. The hope is individual, and the hope comes from the covenant. So we do provide hope in the last segment of the show, but the hope is all individual.
For the system, not for the whole world, for the remnant of those who listen. Wisdom cries aloud in the marketplace, in the streets.
I'm agreeing with you.
I'm agreeing. We're in violent agreement once again.
Yes,
and then one last thing is, given that we have no shortage of lamentations and polemics and ad hominem about the wickedness of the state of the world and mankind's black heart and all that sort of thing, have you considered, it's important sometimes to curse this darkness, but also to light the candle, have you considered at all possibly changing the time proportioning of your program to dedicate perhaps less time to the condemnation of the wickedness and more time to the elucidating of Yahweh's covenant?
That's another great comment. As a matter of fact, we're going to make a transition right now to an individual who wrote me an email that speaks of that particular path. And it is a debate that I have regularly. My hope is that our listeners, and there are tens of thousands of listeners to this program around the world, that they call radio stations and that they get this show syndicated so that we reach more people. And the easiest method to do that, the most direct method to do that, is the political commentary that the report of the news, this news and commentary segment of the program, makes that more viable, and it earns us the opportunity with credibility then to introduce Yahweh's message. That said, I think that the majority of people who listen to this program regularly while they learn from and enjoy, and they write me letters that say they learn from and enjoy the commentary on the news, absolutely prefer the commentary on the Torah and prophets, because that is the solution. That is the candle. That is the light. That's the value. And that's the only reason that we're exposing and condemning human institutions, is to get people to question them so that they're open to Yahweh's truth. And so it is a real debate with me. We do have one program. Okay, there is one caveat I do want to throw in, is that on Fridays I do another hour and a half program. It's called it's on Blog Talk Radio. It's called Shabbat Scripture Study, the Shabbat Torah Study, and we devote an entire hour and a half strictly to Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and there's no other subject that is discussed.
Right, exactly. So, now, for a minute there, I was almost hearing Richard Dawson in The Running Man telling Arnold Schwarzenegger, "We give them what they want, Ben."
No, I don't. But, you know, that was the whole idea of this program, is not to have any alliances with what people want. We were not going to cater and form a bridge to Republicans or Democrats or Tea Partyists or Christians or Muslims or economic interests. That we were just going to deliver the truth. We were going to present the news in the most enlightening, informative way absolutely possible, with a commentary that no one else is providing. And then to transition to insights into Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And, you know, what I wish is that there were others telling the truth about the news, as opposed to being a hack for Republican or Democratic politics. And I wish there were others that were telling the truth about the Torah and presenting Yahweh's testimony as he intended. I wish there were others doing this. And I wish we could promote others doing it, because I don't claim to be the least bit qualified to do either.
But
this is a mission that needs to be done, and both need to be done. It's really how much time do we devote to each?
Yeah, right, exactly. There's much in the way of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms looming ahead yet to be covered.
Yes, there is.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Glenn. Marvelous call. With Glenn now having contributed mightily to the first hour and 15 minutes of this program, we're going to turn to Bill, someone who I met a couple of days ago by email. And we're going to talk about Bill's journey out of 55 years in Christianity, when Shattering Myths continues. After the commercial break. A couple of days ago, I was reading my email. This email came to, and any one of you that wishes to email me can reach me the same way, at yada@yadaya.com. So yada, the Hebrew word for no, YADA, at yadaya.com. It will reach me. I not the world's best with email, and that I get more emails than I really can answer and still be productive during the day, but I do try to answer the vast preponderance of the emails that come into yadaya.com. One of them came in a couple of days ago, as I said, from a man who said that he had been a devout Christian for 55 years. Tell us a little bit about that story, Bill.
Hello, Yada. Yeah, I'm going to start off with a question after I outline a bit of my past. Like you said, since I was 10 years old, I was a Christian and very, very active in the military, retired pilot, politics. We stepped down as a men's ministry leader and was extremely disillusioned after all the time and years that I spent studying God's, what I thought was God's inerrant word. And my question is, why did I see the truth of Yahweh and the Torah, and people much more intelligent than myself, much more learned in the scriptures and the and in the Bible does not see what I'm seeing right now. It feels like the scales have come off my eyes, and that I can, and everywhere I look now, I see Yahweh and right. and the Torah and the truth.
Yes.
And why? My question is, why me? It sort of makes me suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things that that first I want to share is that your background's fairly similar to mine. Very young man, I adopted my parents' religion, and I became extremely active in the Presbyterian Church. I was the youngest ordained ruling elder in the history of the Presbyterian Church. I actually spoke at their national synod, was the keynote speaker at a national synod as a result of my ordination as a ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church. I taught and led evangelism. And so I taught Bible studies. And so I spent a lot of time in Christianity, and I ended up walking away from Christianity for the same reason. I began to question it, and I didn't like where those questions were leading. I'm also a pilot. I was extraordinarily pro-military. I got lucky, however, as it relates to my participating in the military. I was the first year of the lottery where they did not draft the lottery participants for the Vietnam War. Because at the time I was very pro military, I was in favor of the Vietnam War, and I would have gone, and my personality would have gotten me killed. And so I am glad that I was the first year where they did not draft the lottery participants. The answer to your question, Bill, is attitudinal. I do think it helps to be smart. Now, I'm going to differentiate knowledge from understanding. I think that while you have to know to understand, most people that you would consider to be scholars are stumped and stalled at the knowledge state and never do develop understanding. And the transition between knowledge and understanding is almost always attitudinal. Just as why you, why me, and why not others that may know more than you and I may know. And it's all attitudinal. The reason, Glenn, that I begin this program by typically anywhere from 1 to 2 hours of helping people change their attitude towards patriotism, towards politics, towards their military, towards global economic schemes, is because unless they're willing to question these things, then there is no way in the world that Yahweh's truth will resonate with them. So you reached a point, Bill, before the truth was presented to you, that your attitude changed. And you knew there was something wrong with your religion. And that shift in attitude that made you be willing to question your religion and then to embrace the truth when it was in conflict with your religion is the reason you're part of the covenant today. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Bill, who's calling in from Washington. And Bill, after presenting a bit of his perspective, asked a question. You know, why me? Why is it that now I have this opportunity where now I find the truth reinforced everywhere, but why is it that those who are still mired in my old religion, which I now know is false, why are they unable to see the truth, which is reaffirmed everywhere that you look? And my answer to Bill was attitude. And Bill, I don't want to in any way diminish the importance of this singular word. While I was playing the role of dad with my sons, I constantly told them there's only one handicap that you can't overcome. It's a bad attitude. If you have a good attitude towards anything that you're involved in, any relationship that you are in, everything can be resolved. But when you have a bad attitude, it's impossible. Now, let me explain just one example of that. You began by saying that you thought that your Bible was the inerrant word of God.
Yes.
That was your attitude towards your Bible. It's factually untrue. In fact, it's impossible.
I know that now.
Yeah. You know, and all you have to do is recognize a little bit of research that the 69 extant manuscripts, codexes that we have on papyrus of the what's called the Christian New Testament. Of course, there is no New Testament, but that's what the book's called today. That we have 69 extant pre-Constantine manuscripts. And they differ in more than 300,000 places from the post-Constantine manuscripts that provide the basis for the translations for the Christian New Testament. They differ in over 300,000 places, and there's only 182,000 words. So when you have differences of that magnitude between the oldest manuscripts and what you claim, or what the Christians will claim, is the inerrant word of God, that position is wholly and completely ignorant, in total conflict with the facts. But also, Bill, as you know, it's irrational. And it's irrational because what Paul had to say, and his words comprise half of the Christian New Testament. His words are in direct conflict with Yahweh's words in the Torah and the prophets. And so if God said that his seven-step plan is the means to reward his covenant children with the benefits of his covenant, and that there's only one covenant, and that there are five conditions that we must respond to participate in that covenant. And Paul says, you know, that circumcision, which is one of those conditions, is counterproductive. If you're circumcised, you can't be saved. And if he says the Torah is incapable of saving you, when God said exactly the opposite, it's impossible that a book which conflicts on its main thesis can be inerrant. It's irrational, right?
Yes.
So, you know, the difference between you today and the reason you're in this unique position today, the reason I am, is that we both changed our attitude to the point we were willing to question our religion. You have to be willing to question your politics. So that's a very bold move in a society that condemns those who questions what society promotes.
Yes. And I'd like to ask you one more question before I have to leave for a granddaughter's school, grandparents' school luncheon.
Okay.
But, my question has to do with family. My four adult children and 10 grandchildren have reacted from confusion to outright anger to forbidding me to talk to my grandchildren about this. And also, along the same line, do I talk to my pastor and my elders and stop making excuses for not going to church and just tell them why I'm not going to church? And so new, I don't know really how to handle it. And a few tips or a few...
Sure. Yeah, and I may talk on this longer than you can remain, and if that's the case, then please listen to the archives. Bill, my answer is that Yahweh told us that it would be exactly this way. He told us that that fathers would corrupt their own children. And he said that the influence of that would be generational, just as you are witnessing your children corrupt their children. So he actually etched that in stone, that we would corrupt our children to the third and the fourth generation. So we ought not be surprised. Yosha is cited three different times telling listeners that he did not come to bring peace. He didn't come to bring unity. That he came to bring division, and that if you accepted what he said, that you would be an outcast. He says, you know, you need to understand that if you embrace what I'm telling you, that if you embrace the fact that I'm the living representation of the Torah, and you follow me, then your children will disown you. Your parents will disown you. So, first of all, we ought not be surprised. Now, the other part of that is in your letter, you very clearly articulated the realization that what you have gained by coming to know Yahweh, the excitement of coming to know him as he is and to engage in the covenant, vastly excels over where you once were. And we're all in that position. So you're now passionate to share with your sons and your children and with their children what you've come to know, even with your former pastor and with the other Christian leaders at that church. We're all in that position where what we find is so enormously enlightening, so uplifting, so freeing, so liberating, so empowering, so exciting, so real that we want to share it. But the answer to that, Bill, is that if you share what you've come to know with someone who is ill-prepared to hear it because their attitude is still religious or still political, still mired in patriotism, they're not going to process it. God's own testimony will not only not resonate with them, God's own testimony will make no difference for them, but worse than that, when they hear what God has to say, they will hate it. Now, that's staggering, but it's absolutely true. You can tell your pastor, former pastor, why you are no longer a Christian and why you have chosen to engage in the covenant based upon the Torah's teaching regarding the covenant, and you can cite Yahweh's words as the reason that you have done so and how you have done so, and your pastor will scream, will be enraged. He will hate what God has to say. And he will accuse you of being demonic for having quoted God's own testimony. What I have found, Bill, and God told us it would be this way, is that those who are overtly religious or overtly political, that no amount of evidence and no amount of reason will prevail. They're allergic to it. Their faith repulses evidence and reason. And so it does not matter how perfect a presentation that you make of Yahweh's testimony, they will reject it. Now, I'll give you a great example. Yahusha was a great deal more articulate and a great deal more knowledgeable than you or I. And yet the vast preponderance of people that he spoke to rejected his message. The overwhelming preponderance of those that he spoke to rejected what he had to say. And of those who embraced what he had to say, it took them years before they actually understood. And even after 3 years with his own disciples, they were still making the transition between knowledge and understanding. So if he was incapable of using words, evidence and reason, and particularly the thing that he emphasized was Yahweh's testimony in the Torah and prophets, if his presentation of Yahweh's testimony in the Torah and prophets and the conclusions that could be reasoned from his testimony did not prevail with the vast preponderance of his audience, we ought not expect to succeed at a rate better than he did. So what do you do? Here's my my conclusions to that after having lived with this now for 10 years. Is the single most important thing you can do is the most enjoyable thing you can do, the thing you're already doing. Immerse yourself in Yahweh's testimony. I've provided some really good tools for you to do that, but I don't want you to stop there. I just want you to use these tools as a way to get going. The first of those to in terms of approaching Christians and cleansing yourself of Christianity is to read Questioning Paul. Now, the old version of Questioning Paul is available at questioningpaul.com, but there the new version of Questioning Paul is available at the site yhwh-qra.com and also at blessyahweh.com. At both sites, you'll find the new version of Questioning Paul. It's just the new version is twice as long and vastly more convincing. Because I followed the advice that I'm giving you, I continued to learn, and based upon what I've learned, I included in the longer version of Questioning Paul. It will provide you with all the tools you need to get those that you care about to begin questioning the religion. If they're capable of questioning the religion, if they're capable of accepting the attitude that when God's own testimony proves that their religion is false, that they will consider what God has to say, then Questioning Paul will provide all of the tools and all of the questions and all of the proof that you could ever need to reach them in that regard. But coming to understand that Christianity is wrong, while it's important and it was necessary for you to come to know Yahweh, the next step is to come to know Yahweh. And I'm going to talk when we return to Shattering Myths of the two places that you can go to accomplish that. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're addressing a question that was asked by a man who had been a Christian for 55 years. In fact, I'm going to share a little bit about the email that he initially wrote to me and my response to him, because it leads to the other two sites that I was going to suggest that he read. He wrote this 3 days ago. Yada. More people than you could possibly imagine are listening to you around the world. Please keep doing what you're doing. Never be discouraged. You have opened my eyes to Yahweh and to his Torah. I have been a devout Christian for 55 years, and all Christians I've shared Yahweh with think I'm crazy. I love my 4 children and 10 grandchildren. What can I do? I want all of them to know the door, way to life is Yahweh. I am retired military. I am a previous politician. I'm a retired airline pilot. I was a men's ministry leader, and now I'm an outcast. It is all worth the peace and understanding I have now. So keep it up, Craig. Yada. I read Tea with Terrace when I first came out. I had no idea that it would have this kind of an effect on my life. You know, he mentioned my name and called it, began in yada. I do want to say before I share with my response to him that I recommend strongly that you go to the Bless Yahweh website. It's beautifully done. It is presented by a man who I've come to know online. First name is Richard. And Richard does one thing in the site that I'm not crazy about, only one, but most of the attitude and presentation on the site I am in complete accord with. And that is that he does not use yada, but instead my actual name in the presentation of Questioning Paul and of An Introduction to God and of Yada Yah, which are the books that we'll speak of in a moment. You know, when I wrote Prophet of Doom, it was important that I write Prophet of Doom under my real name. And the reason is that everyone that had been willing to criticize Islam was being threatened, hunted down by Muslims, had fatwas against them, death threats, and had to go into hiding. And almost all of them used fictitious names under which to write. And I was so convinced by Yahweh himself that I would never have to duck, I would never have to go into hiding, that I could do thousands of radio interviews, I could publish this response to Islam called Tea with Terrace and then Prophet of Doom, openly under my actual name, and that I would have nothing to fear. My family and I would have nothing to fear from Muslims because of what God had promised to do. And so it was important to write that, not under a fictitious name, but under my real name, to say, you know, I will personally stand behind this. This is the truth. This is what the entire world, particularly Muslims, need to know about Islam. This is the most comprehensive, the best documented, the most contextual and complete presentation of the Islamic scriptures, their Quran and Hadith, ever written. You need to know who Muhammad was, what he did, and what he said. And I will not only author this comprehensive presentation of Islam's oldest source material under my actual name, but I'll do thousands of radio interviews under my name. I'm not going to hide from anyone. That's much of what Glenn was saying in the beginning of the second hour of this program. God has a plan for those who are willing to convey his truth. And as it relates to Yada Yah, this website, yadayah.com, Introduction to God or IntroToGod.org, and Questioning Paul, it's my contention that I'm irrelevant, that my opinions are irrelevant, and that those three volumes of books exist to present Yahweh's perspective, Yahweh's attitude, Yahweh's words, and that I am nothing more than a conveyor of Yahweh's testimony, so my name is irrelevant.